Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Actor Tate Donovan played a key role as Bob Anders, one of the Americans caught up in the Iran hostage crisis, in 2012's best picture, Argo. Now Donovan has returned to the subject matter, directing the new NFL Network documentary America's Game and the Iran Hostage Crisis. From Smokehouse Productions, the film tells the story of how bits and pieces of football news helped the American hostages stay connected to their home and families during their year-plus of captivity.
This is an NBC News special report.
Iranian students are holding 59 Americans hostage at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran.
An option pass, touchdown, Ron Smith!
Bradshaw firing downfield, and a touchdown for Pittsburgh!
Students wearing an American flag on the steps of the embassy.
The remaining demonstrators in Tehran have overrun the American embassy and now appear in control of American lives.
This January marks the 35th anniversary of the hostages' release, and Donovan's film airs January 19th at 8 p.m. on the NFL Network. Also a Broadway and Williamstown Theater Festival veteran here in our region, Tate Donovan's screen career includes stints on Masters of Sex, 24, Deception, The O.C., and as the voice of Hercules. Tate Donovan, welcome to the Roundtable.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How did you get interested in this subject matter? Was it Argo that first got you thinking about it?
I remember it as a kid. You know, it was very important. It was a big thing when I was around 15, 16 years old. The hostage crisis was, you know, just on the news every single day. And it was a real big turning point for America, for sure. But I didn't really sort of start, you know, think about it too much until, Argo. That was an incredible experience to be a part of, for sure.
I know you've addressed this before, but can you talk about how you all accomplished the feeling of being in that room for so long in that film?
Well, you know, Ben was great.
Ben being Ben Affleck, the director.
Yeah. He literally confined us. We had to stay in the house that we shot in for a week. And we had no contact with the outside world. We had no newspapers, no television, nothing. We weren't allowed to use our phones or our computers. And, you know, I was not looking forward to it. I was just like, this is miserable. I don't want to do this. But it turned out to be an incredible experience. The six of us just really bonded, and we didn't even want to leave. By the time the week was over, we were like, do we have to go? This is fantastic. They bring in food, and, you know, it was pretty a great life. All we did was play games and stuff like that. But, you know, while we were filming it, I think that sort of camaraderie and that sort of intense, you know, the intimacy that you get from just living together and spending 24 hours together, you know, came through.
I think as a viewer, you certainly feel the claustrophobia. However, you did it for a week, and they did it for 444 days, right?
Right, right. Well, the people in Argo were there for 8 weeks.
Right, and they were sort of hiding in the Canadian residence.
Embassy. Yeah, right. But the documentary is about the hostages who were in the embassy for 444 days, and those guys were, you know, they went through a lot more difficult time. I mean, they were, you know, subject to some very harsh treatment. So, and what an incredibly lengthy stay they put up with. They're pretty amazing guys. It was a real honor to make this film to help tell some of their stories. I felt very humble around those guys, for sure.
It really struck me in the film how they sort of kept their optimism the whole time. The rest of the world really didn't know too much what they were thinking, but it seems like they stayed united throughout the entire ordeal.
Yeah, well, you know, it was difficult because they were separated. You know, a lot of them were in solitary confinement and or rooms with just two or three. And, you know, the ones in the military sort of had sort of training on this a little bit, you know, if you're kept captive, at least the military sort of trains you. So they sort of had a little experience, but you're right. I mean, these guys just kept an amazingly, you know, positive attitude and knew that one day, you know, this would be resolved. I mean, I'm sure, you know, the ups and downs. I mean, you hear some of the hostages talk about how they got out safely with their fingers and toes intact, but, you know, just mentally, it's just so difficult to be sort of toyed with. And, you know, they thought that they were going to be released and then they weren't. And then, you know, they just sort of played with them as pawns. And it was, you know, just emotionally really really tough.
Hmm. Well, maybe I'm a little biased, but one of the heroes of your film is a radio reporter. Tell us about the role of Alex Payne and what he had to do with this story.
Yeah, Alex Payne is the star of the show, and he just is one of the more engaging and open-hearted reporters. So he's just a fantastic guy.
I asked if I could go over. The management at KMPC thought I was crazy. Local reporter going to cover an international event like that. So I kept bugging them every day.
He basically, Alex, lied his way to get into the country. He came from a radio station out in Los Angeles in 1979. This big story was happening, and he was like, I got to go there. And he sort of like lied to his bosses and said he had a visa already. And they're like, all right, okay, we'll pay for it. And he went and would do these radio broadcasts from Tehran, which was very unusual. And it was the only radio station, I think, doing it at the time. And he slowly but surely started getting messages into the hostages. You know, he was a great combination of being a great reporter, but also a very compassionate guy. You know, he just really felt for the hostages being held in there. And he slowly but surely, you know, just would sit for hours and days and talk to the guards. And a lot of them knew English because they had studied in America, and a lot of them knew football. And so he eventually would start talking about sports and football, and, you know, he just basically talked his way into sort of getting messages to the hostages, and then Christmas cards, and then this tape of the Super Bowl, which was basically where our story is, the seed of our story.
Yeah, I think it's a revelation. Certainly it was for me, but it will be for many viewers, that even though the guards were standing outside thousands of people chanting death to America and holding posters of the Ayatollah and so on, all of the B-roll that we've seen over the years, they knew NFL football. They knew American football.
Yeah, you know, and it still goes on today. You know, in Iran, there are thousands of football fans, and they have football leagues, you know, flag football leagues, and they play, like, you know, Tuesday nights under the lights. And it's even though, we were sort of drummed into us that, you know, all Iranians, are chanting death to America, they, in fact, don't feel that way. I think they were angry at the sort of history that America had and being involved in their government, but with the Shah, but, I think that they sort of, and obviously they made a really terrible mistake taking over our embassy. That was just an injury to the relationships that we, you know, the relationship between America and Iran. But hopefully, you know, with this new Iran nuclear deal, hopefully those relationships will start to heal a little bit.
What do you make of the news recently that the hostages will finally, all these years later, be compensated?
I think it's fantastic. I mean, I think that's one of the more difficult parts of the story, is that, you know, we welcome them home and we love them, and then they sort of were forgotten about a little bit. You know, I mean, people didn't even know about that. I mean, so much of our audience doesn't even know about the hostage crisis. And Argo was the first movie to sort of bring it into the consciousness of the West, basically. I think it's fantastic. I think it's well-deserved. These guys are our heroes, and really showed a sort of higher form of citizenship. I think anybody who works in the State Department and goes to posts that are dangerous or where America has tricky relations, I think deserves, you know, a lot of credit. And I'm so happy that the hostages are finally being recognized.
We're speaking with Tate Donovan, and he is the director of the new NFL The Timeline film, America's Game and the Iran Hostage Crisis. It'll be airing again on January the 19th at 8 o'clock. Can you tell us the story of how the radio reporter, Alex Payne, eventually snuck in tapes of the Super Bowl for the hostages?
Yeah, well, it's great. It all started with, he was a radio reporter, and they would call in one of the wives of the hostages called into his radio station and said, hey, Alex, is there any way you can get a message to my husband, Jerry Plotkin? And he's like, well, I'll try. And he got a tape recording of Debbie Plotkin, his wife, and asked the guards to have Jerry listen to it. And he didn't hear anything for weeks and weeks and weeks. And all of a sudden, this tape came back from Jerry Plotkin. It was the first contact the whole world had with any of the hostages. And it was kind of, very sort of, it was a lot of propaganda is in the message about how, great the Iranian government is and how terrible the American government is. But they knew that Jerry was alive. And so from there, they said, well, listen, is there any way we can send Christmas cards? So he was like, yeah. And so literally hundreds of thousands of Christmas cards from all over America were sent to the hostages, and it ended up being truckloads to being delivered, and it actually kind of angered the Iranian government a little bit how many Christmas cards were arriving. And then to stay in the country, they ordered all the journalists out of Iran, and Alex had spoken to the guards about football and life in America and stuff like that, and they, in order to stay, he's like, hey, listen, can I stay a couple of weeks extra to record the Super Bowl for the hostages? They'd really appreciate it. And then I'll leave as soon as I get you the Super Bowl. So his station was carrying it on the radio. So he got up in the middle of the night and tape recorded the Super Bowl and brought it to the gates the next morning and gave it to him and said, you have to make sure that the hostages listen to this. And they're like, yeah, great. We want to listen to it too, because they were football fans. And then off he went. He was forced to leave.
Amazing. If I have this right, you made your directorial debut doing another sports documentary on the 30 for 30 series about Arthur Ashe. What attracts you to doing this type of film?
Well, I just love sports documentaries. I can't turn them off. I mean, 30 for 30 is just I just think it's the greatest series, on television. It's just amazing to me. I don't even know why. I'm not really even into sports that much, but something about just the drama, the inherent drama of athletes and the sort of unique lives they lead. And it's always amazing to me how people come from, nothing and, reach such great heights. And I've always been sort of interested in it, and I got the opportunity to tell this story for 30 for 30 for ESPN about Arthur Ashe and his brother, and it's just an amazing, great little story about how his brother stayed in Vietnam an extra tour so that his brother, Arthur, could stay and play tennis, and that was the year he won the U.S. Open and became a big tennis legend. So it's a great, beautiful story, and nobody knew about it. Not even members of Arthur Ashe's family even knew the story. So it was a real pleasure and honor to tell a story of sacrifice like that.
Do you have any other sports stories that you'd like to be turning into a film, or maybe you're already working on one?
Not yet. I'm still sort of thinking about that, but if I do, I definitely, it'll be along the lines of a story that maybe no one really knows and needs to be told.
You're a veteran of the stage here in our region, in the Berkshires. Any plans to come back and do theater in our neighborhood anytime soon?
God, I love Williamstown. Williamstown is one of the great experiences I've ever had. I've done 3 plays up there, and every time I go up there, I love it. So, yeah, just a matter of timing and the right play and the right part, and I'd love to go back. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Okay, I would be in trouble domestically if I didn't ask you about the OC. a lot of shows from that era are having something of a comeback and are being rebooted. Do you ever see that happening?
Oh, you mean them doing another version of the OC?
Something new.
That's hilarious.
Some sort of reunion.
I played the grandfather this time around. I don't know, maybe. I mean, Josh Schwartz, who was the writer and creator of that, he's such a talented, he's from New England. He's from Rhode Island, as a matter of fact. He is is such a creative guy and has his finger on the pulse of what young people especially want to see. So I can't imagine another one without him. But, you know, I'm just glad that they're, you know, showing reruns, you know?
You've been on so many different series. Which series has the craziest fan base that you've dealt with?
The craziest? The OC is pretty, you know. But Friends, of course, you know. I went to England recently. I shot 24 over there. And, man, the English fans are just insane about Friends. I mean, you think the Americans are big Friends fans. The English are just nuts about it. I mean, they knew every line I ever said on that show, and I was only in 5 episodes. But I would say this sort of Damages, the show I did for FX with Glenn Close, people really get into that show. They're the most fervent, sort of smartest fan base I have are definitely Damages fans.
Last question. I was getting ready for this interview, looking at your upcoming films, and there's a film coming out called Elvis and Nixon about their famed meeting that you're in. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, it's a great little story. It's a true story about how Elvis one day walked up to the guard on the White House lawn and handed him a 7-page letter to the president asking to be some sort of FBI agent, agent at large, that's what it was called, and which I don't even think exists, but he wanted to be, you know, to fight the drug war. And the guard, of course, had no idea. And I play the president's chief of staff, and basically the letter gets to me, and we have to decide whether, you know, we're going to let, you know, Elvis. Nixon didn't want to see Elvis, but everyone was like, hey, listen, he's the king of rock and roll. You got to see the king of rock and roll. So eventually there was a meeting took place between them about a day or two later. And it's this crazy true story about that meeting. It's pretty fun, pretty fun. Also, I did a movie called Manchester by the Sea, where we shot, which is a town up in Massachusetts.
Tate Donovan is the director of the NFL Network documentary America's Game and the Iran Hostage Crisis, which is airing again Tuesday, January 19th at 8 o'clock. Tate Donovan, thank you so much for spending all this time with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Have a good one.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.